Welcome to The Wagon, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
It is the Waggle Podcast once again. It's one I'm very excited about, and I'm excited to tell you that it's brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips, who are known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, which includes some shampoo that is massaged into your scalp, plus a hot steam towel for your face, and more importantly than any of that, sports on TV, like, for example, hockey, baseball, basketball, maybe some soccer, some German football, if you will, some Bundesliga, but most importantly, Canadian football. Oh, and legendary haircuts. Sport Clips, it's good to be a guy. It's good to be a Sports Clips guy. This podcast is brought to you by Sport Clips. It's brought to you by the CFL.ca, and it's brought to you by Davis Sanchez. Davis, how are you?
Hey! What's happening, Deej?
I am good. I am very tired from binging The Last Dance. And basically making sure that all of my Sportsnet content over the last 5 weeks has been Last Dance related. But I did think of you while watching, not because you are a legendary competitor like Michael Jordan,
and you berate me like that's where we were going.
I thought of you, and no, not because you don't have a gambling problem, you have a competitiveness problem. I thought of you because it, for me, was weird to see Michael Jordan playing real basketball games in a bunch of Jordan shoes that now go for thousands of dollars, many of which you own in your personal collection. That was my Last Dance recollection. But what did you take from the film?
Probably the biggest thing would be the competitor. I grew up, like most of us that are in our generation, grew up watching Mike and but I had kind of moved to, just because the athletes are better nowadays, and I kind of moved to LeBron, maybe being in that conversation as the greatest, just because of the evolution of the athlete. And now I'm kind of back to that compete level, the domination that MJ had psychologically over who he was playing. It's kind of got me leaning back to realizing just that there's no one like him, and so that was kind of cool to kind of bring that back. And obviously, older and more mature and able to look at that, and more life experience, probably not more mature, but more life experience, and able to look at it from through a different lens now. And that's the biggest thing is just realizing, you know, the competitor that he was, and it's really special in that regard.
Yeah, let us know, our listeners, if there was a CFL team you wanted to see a 10-part series on, who would it be? Who do you want the CFL Last Dance edition to be? I'm actually going to choose the 2009 Alouettes. I'd love to be in that locker room. Mark Trestman probably would never allow it. But Mark Trestman has some Phil Jackson-like quality, so maybe we could get that done. The other thing I thought of throughout the series was, man, that was an amazingly rich time for broadcasters. Like the calls on some of Jordan's plays, whether it was Bob Costas or Marv Albert, were so, so good. And the Michael Jordan of play-by-play in our country is Chris Cuthbert. And so as much as I loved, you know, hearing Marv Albert call Jordan, "Yes, and the foul." Like, as much as I love those calls, Chris Cuthbert is my guy when it comes to play-by-play calls. When I think of a play-by-play voice, that's the voice I have in my head, Davis.
Yeah, I mean, that's me as well. And growing up, and my brother and all his friends, when I was playing, I would often get messages and voicemails from my brother and his friends, like, repeating CC's calls. We should have had my brother on, because he could probably, you know, verbatim give some of the calls, the CFL calls from back in the day. So there's a whole generation of folks who, yeah, both hockey and football, who grew up and listening to famous calls by the man.
Yeah, as much as I love a spectacular move, by Michael Jordan. That's my Marv Albert. I love the Milt Stegall touchdown beagle call. And why don't we actually tap into the man, the voice behind so many great CFL moments? Coming up next on the Waggle, it's the man who Davis is allowed to call CC. I'm going to call him Mr. Chris Cuthbert. He's up next. And so if you're tired of hearing the voice of myself or Davis Sanchez on this podcast, we have a real treat for you this week as we get the illustrious, the beautiful, the booming voice of Chris Cuthbert, the voice of Canadian football in our country. And first and foremost, Chris, thank you for taking the time. And what has that voice been doing in this pause period where we have been without sports? Are you calling, you know, neighborhood street races in your neighborhood? What have you been up to?
I probably wouldn't mind, but I think the neighbors would take exception with that. So, no, I've been lying low, watching some old games as much as I can stand of myself, and waiting patiently. And boy, it'd be nice to get back to work, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no question. I think we all agree, get back to real work. The fact that there's record unemployment in our country, many people would agree. So normally there's a cadence to your year in terms of what you're doing at a certain point of time. And, you know, around this time, you're getting your boards together, thinking of the season, you know, probably got a lot of lozenges going because the voice has had a rough stretch with so many games passed and some upcoming. Has it been odd for you not to be in your yearly routine that you've had for decades now?
It is, you know, it is, it's a little different. Although right now is about the only time of the year I ever get a break. My break comes after the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs and just prior to preseason. So, I'd be somewhere on holiday right now, but usually my trip back from wherever I am is where I really start to ramp up all my reading on training camp. And I guess things are different now because training camp's been moved up a little bit when it was supposed to take place. But it's going to start to feel a whole lot different in the next couple of weeks when that ramping up, that kind of the cramming for the exam period is not happening when you're trying to catch up on everything that's happened for nine teams over the off season and get ready to hit the ground running in the preseason. So, yeah, that's so far on hold, which is too bad.
Yeah, Chris, you mentioned the cramming or getting ready for the season, which you do every year. If, for me, I'm relatively new to this game, so I've been using this time to kind of build my systems, meaning, you know, my depth charts and my information, so it's easily accessible when once the seasons eventually do start. I've been with you in the booth when you're getting ready. You have big charts and boards and everything that you use for your games. Do you keep this stuff on computer? Are you? Is it handwritten? How do you keep all of the information that you need with you as the years go on?
I'm old school, as you know, and so my boards are handwritten. They take about 3 hours to do, and that process is partly just crunching numbers and trying to get pertinent stats for every game, keeping everything as fresh as I can. And I'll travel with all the previous depth charts I've had for a team, as the weeks go by, and I'll keep writing in the anecdotes or the little notes that I haven't used yet. I try not to use the same stuff more than once. Sometimes if you think something's really good, you might come back to it, especially if something happens that's kind of takes you right down that road again. But I'm old school. I wish I'd probably save a lot of time if I did a lot more computer work, but that's not the way I do it, because I think with writing by hand and everything, it's also a memory exercise. So I always find by about a month into the season, I'm really kind of dialed in on every team pretty well.
So you'll drag some of this stuff from the previous week's depth charts that you, like you say, you either liked it or you didn't use it, and you just add those, and then you keep the old depth charts that you're not traveling with somewhere if you want to pull from those?
Yeah, I've got one of the messier offices of anybody you'll talk to. So yeah, those depth charts have piled up over the years. And you know what? I probably don't have many from 15, 20 years ago. I just moved and some of those depth charts took a hit. But you know, it is fun to go back over old depth charts and see names that you might have forgotten about. One of my regrets about the CFL is that a lot of really good players sometimes slide away without us really noticing as much as we should. I mean, the great players in the Hall of Famers, you always remember, but there's guys that play a half dozen years in the league and make a significant contribution, and all of a sudden they're gone, and maybe you don't realize it until you know, you check up on their names or whatever 5 years down the road, and you go, wow, what happened to that guy?
That is,
I mean,
so
that doesn't
true.
Happen with Davis Sanchez. You remember all the great moments that he had, but for a lot of other guys, that's the case.
You've made some names, household names, by having great calls on their big plays, which has given us all memories. I definitely have my list of favorite Cuthbert calls, but I don't want to lead the witness. I actually want to hear from you. What are the calls that really stick with you? Ones that maybe you hear them afterwards that give you chills, and ones that you really like, you know what? I nailed that. I got that one right.
Well, I mean, you know, I'd probably rather hear yours, but, you know, we've just gone through a lot of old games where guys have set records, and, those mean a lot to me. The Mike Pringle record's a little bit different because, unfortunately, he came up a yard short in the previous game. He came into a game needing a yard to break George Reed's record. That was a shame. But for me, my highlight of a Mike Pringle call would be when he went over 2,000 yards, I think, in 1999. Milt Stegall's touchdown record, G. Roy Simon's receiving record. The one I was probably most proud of was Anthony Calvillo becoming the all-time pro football yardage leader with that catch and run by Jamel Richardson.
Final play, third quarter, second and a long five. He's got Jamel Richardson still going. It might be right here. He's passed the ball. Anthony Calvillo is the all-time Canadian Football League and pro football passing leader.
You know, that's one of those that you wanted it to be right, and the play allowed it to be right, and fortunately I didn't screw it up. So I find those personal milestones are ones, but I guess they're, you know, by the playoff, the key plays in playoff games, the ones that the people dial back and make an impact on them for a lot of years. I get sent clips by people who say, man, I loved hearing you make this call, and that's special if you get remembered, you know, as part of a big play. I mean, the masterpiece is on the field, but if we framed it right, that makes you feel good.
So the one for me is 2006, Bombers Eskimos, Milt Stegall, the touchdown Beagle, the miracle catch, the Hail Mary catch. You got coaches running down the sidelines. Do you remember that? Remember that moment? That was a time in the league, and it's still the case, where you literally felt in every game no lead was safe. And that play, to me, is the epitome of it. And you beautifully you know, captured the moment. Do you remember that call and everything that went into it?
I do, because it became a bit of a controversial call. You know, I'll backtrack on the, that was a terrible game. And it was one of those few games where you're thinking, man, let's get this one done. And we got down to the final couple of plays, and Milt almost scored on the previous play. And even though you thought it was completely unlikely, that second last play and the defensive coverage of the Eskimos made you think, wow, they almost did that. They almost pulled off a miracle play. So they had one more play, last play of the game, and everybody knows what happened. Now, the reason it was a little bit controversial is my brain kind of got slowed down. And as I watched the play, I got a little ahead of myself, and Milt makes the catch, and I'm thinking, okay, he's going to get tackled around the 45, 50-yard line. And that's what's going on in my head while I'm calling it. Now, Milt made a guy miss, and I was actually kind of correcting myself when I went. I kind of went, no, like, no, the guy didn't make the tackle, and everybody knows what happens. He takes it to the house, and it might be the most remarkable play I've ever called. But there's a little no in there, like I was actually kind of having to alert myself that this play was happening. It wasn't just my imagination. And because if you look at it again, it seems like Milt is probably going to get stopped at midfield, and somehow he breaks away. And it is the most remarkable single play I think I've called in the Canadian Football League.
One last shot, barring a penalty for Kevin Glenn. Downfield for Stiegel, he's got it!
Oh no!
Emil Stiegel! Are you kidding? This is unbelievable! Touchdown, Bombers! The most remarkable touchdown of Milt Stiegel's career! 100 yards on the final play! And it's 133 touchdowns in his career. Well, they didn't want to pass interference, but they forgot to tackle. Unbelievable.
You made a comment a minute ago, CC, about it being a terrible game. I just follow up on that. Is there, you know, there's that fine line of blowing smoke, but keeping the bosses happy. We know that, you know, you're never supposed to say that the game is over, and you're always supposed to, you know, try to, you know, build as much intrigue as possible. That's what keeps the viewership. But at what point are there times when you're watching games and you and Glenn or whoever you're working with, and you're thinking, gosh, this is a terrible game. Are you able to say that, or how do you get through those tough times?
Well, you know, I love great football games because they are so easy to call, and you just get carried along for the ride, and it's awesome. Nothing better than a wild shootout, or, you know, and it doesn't have to be a lot of points. Good defense, tight game, down to the wire, love it. But there are some games, you get them every year. I do 40 games a year, and I'll bet there's five or six that are either blowouts or just, you know, the execution is not great. And those are work. And you know what? We get paid work and make it as interesting as you possibly can make it. But those are a little tougher. And it's just, but I always respect the game. And you never know when somebody's going to throw a bomb to Milt Stiegel for a 100-yard miracle play. I mean, we could have shut that thing down, and it's amazing in the space of 5 seconds, you know, 2 hours and 50 minutes of tough slugging became one of the most memorable moments. So you never know, and so you always have to keep grinding, and if you do, you often get rewarded.
You mentioned on that particular play, you know, they were trying to, Edmonton was trying to make sure they did not create a pass interference call, which is kind of the key at that point, not let them get to midfield. So they kind of backed off, and right away, that's what you mentioned after you said you had your brain cramp there. You mentioned, they're trying not to allow a PI, but they forgot to tackle, I think is the phrase you used. But I question about duos and groups here. And there's been some conversation, a lot of buzz around Tony Romo and Jim Nantz, that combination. Romo's obviously got a Chris Cuthbert type payday here. But I wanted to get your take on. on kind of his style and what's made him initially at least a buzz and someone that everyone wants to tune into, and that's him calling the plays. There's a a little game they play. I know they had it at the local sports bar or where I grew up, and it's called QB1. Have you guys ever seen it or heard of QB1?
Hey, Davis, I'm gonna brag for a second.
Talk to me.
Because QB1 came out back in the – you're going to have to help me with the year.
Yeah.
But the very first QB1 day in Edmonton, they had the media come in, and it was the drive, the Broncos and the Browns. Yeah. And I think I called every play right on the winning drive and won the QB1 that day. My career has been dead downhill since then, but John Elway and I were together on that drive.
Would that be like the Marty Schottenheimer Browns and Elway, that long drive? Was that 86?
Oh, all the years run together now, but yeah. It's the famous one that that broke the Browns' hearts for sure.
There we go. So I think it's 86, but well, congratulations, CC.
I had to get that in. So, but as far as Tony Romo is concerned, you know, I understand the appeal. He's brought something that nobody else had. I would prefer not. It's like spoiler alert for me. I'd rather let the play unfold and break down why it worked and why it didn't work. But I get why he's as popular as he is. You know, everybody's got their opinion on it. And and clearly he has made a lot of people in the business rethink that role. And I think a little bit of it works. But, you know, I've got plenty of respect for the other guys that do it and nothing but the utmost respect for the guys I get to work with on a regular basis. I'll tell you a complimentary story. I remember years ago I used to do the All-Star skills in the NHL, and I remember one of our color guys would go in the morning and ask every player who was in the shootout competition what movie was going to make. And I always thought, and he'd like to tell everybody, well, this is what he's going to do. And I'm thinking, I don't know if people want to hear that because, A, sometimes the guys forget what they said and then they do something else and then you're wrong. But, B, I think there's something to the suspense of, you know, a showdown and what is about to transpire. So, I mean, that's my take. Other people think differently, and I respect, you know, the other ways to kind of approach it.
I'm of the same opinion as you, and that when you first started doing that, if you'll notice, Tony Romo is actually really curtailed off of that and not doing it as much. And I said the same thing, and that's why I used the QB1 example, because I was saying to my friends and people I was talking to, if I want to sit and listen to somebody guess the play before it happens, I'll go play QB1. I don't want to watch a game and hear that. And although I think Tony Romo's great, that was my take on that. But he, as you've noticed, as time's gone on, if you have noticed, he's really slowed that down. And I'll give a quick, a humble brag to myself on this one as well, is that in the Super Bowl, there was an actual bet on the prop bets. And it was, will Tony Romo call six or more plays correct or eight or more plays correct? I can't remember what the total number was, but it was one of the 5,000 prop bets that they have in the Super Bowl. And I ran up and down. I was up at TSN doing the game, and I was telling anybody who would listen to me, it's going under, it's going under, it's going under. And for the fact that, and the reason that Tony Romo is, he gets it, and he doesn't want to make, especially the Super Bowl, bigger or make himself bigger than the Super Bowl. So he's going to do it less often. And lo and behold, I cashed a winner there. And I felt pretty good about myself, but
big time.
Yeah, that's my Romo and Jim Nantz story. CC, one more quick one to follow up on that real fast. What does it take for, or what do you think the key is in cohesion when you talk about a broadcast group and in the booth in particular? I know there's a big team that goes into the broadcast, but for you and your color guy, which let's say Glenn Suter for CFL most of the time, what do you think is the key to that group and the cohesion?
Well, there is something about a comfort zone that you try and create in the booth. You know, I found it pretty natural with with, I mean, I go back to doing playoff games in the 90s, even when I was with CBC, and Suits would join us there. And it just was natural from probably the first game we did. But it's natural with Dwayne, and even, and what I try to do is A, stay out of the way, and B, help bring out the best in the guy that's beside me. And, you know, I know Suits likes to dig into some individual matchups during the game. So football is easy to call in the sense you, for a play-by-play guy, you've got 10 seconds, 15 seconds of a play call, and then you identify the play, the player that made the play, the player that made the tackle, yardage, whatever, in the circumstance. But then get out of the way and let the analyst analyze. And you know, Matt Dunnigan comes in and he doesn't have as many reps, but he brings amazing enthusiasm to the booth. And you kind of, you want to kind of fan that flame so that, because I think everybody has that, that likability factor with Matt because of his passion. So you kind of, you try and bring that out with him or whatever, but a lot of football and a lot of broadcasting is generated from that source that nobody sees, and that's the guys in the truck. And they have storylines that we've talked about, and if a play kind of falls into one of those storylines that you've discussed in the lead up, then you kind of take it down that road, and you lead, you know, the analyst down that road as well. And so there's different plot lines that you're trying to establish. So there's a lot of little things, and but the biggest one might be to just stay out of the way and let the analyst analyze.
I did my first color in Montreal in CJAD, where you were back in the day. CC, I believe you spent some time in Montreal at CJAD.
And voice of the Montreal Concords.
Is that right? And what years were that?
I was on the sidelines in 81 for CJAD, which was an amazing year to start in the Canadian Football League, because the Alouettes brought in Vince Ferragamo and Billy White Shoes Johnson. James Scott was a 1,000-yard receiver with the Chicago Bears. Keith Geary was on that team. Chris Walby was a rookie defensive lineman. Wally Buono was on that team. There was a carryover from some of the great players of the 70s with the Alouettes, like Peter Dallariva and Glenn Weir and
Tony Proudfoot. Is he there?
Tony
Proudfoot?
Tony Proudfoot was on that team. But just to add to that, then 82, 83, 84, I was the voice of the Montreal Concords. And the rarity of the Concords, they had not one but two different Canadian quarterbacks at the time. So that was interesting. And now I'm going to forget the one, but Jerry DiTillio was a guy that played a lot of quarterback. And then they brought in a Nebraska star, Turner Gill. My best story about quarterbacking, though, in Montreal was Joe Gallant had a big job at trying to rebuild that franchise from the demise of the Alouettes. And he put a guy by the name of Flutie on the negotiation list. And Joe felt all along that Doug Flutie would turn the Montreal Football Club around. And I remember kind of starting to follow Flutie because of this. And I got excited when Flutie threw the Hail Mary, because I thought, you know, here's the guy that's going to come to Montreal and turn that franchise around. And I remember the day after the Hail Mary for Boston College, and Joe Gallant was devastated. And I wondered why, and it was pretty clear afterwards. Joe said, he's not coming now. After that, he's going to get a look in the NFL. And as it turned out, it was many years after that before Doug Flutie ever got to the Canadian Football League. Joe was right that he was going to be a guy that would have a huge impact on the CFL. It just never happened in Montreal.
So as fans, we get excited to watch great players. Do you get excited to call great players? Is there a different energy when you know you're going to see a player that's pretty special?
No doubt. The great players are the best friend of a play-by-play guy, because they generate the greatness of the game, and nobody was greater than Doug Flutie for that. It was magic calling Flutie games in the 90s for Calgary and Toronto. It was never dull, and the great receivers, the great running backs. I mean, Alan Pitts, Milt Stegall, G. Roy Simon, those guys did such special things on the field. Mike Pringle, play after play. I better come up with a DB or two here soon. I should say one of the highlight games I ever had was October 25th, 1999. Davis Sanchez picks off Kerwin Bell for his league-leading ninth interception of the year, and takes it to the house in a battle between the Argos and the Alouettes.
Should have been perfected in training camp. That was a bad example, and now he's thrown it away. It's the ninth interception of the year for Davis Sanchez, and he can score. He will. Well, give that man a shoe shine, because he leads the Canadian Football League.
So great players make the play-by-play guys sound better, and Davis, you did for me back in 99.
I remember that call clearly. One of my favorites, probably my favorite, the favorite call of my career for sure.
That was nine interceptions. That's pretty good for the kid on the corner.
Not bad for a guy that his hands are so small, I could barely hold a Big Mac with one hand, Chris.
The funny thing is how times have changed. If you had a great call when your career started, maybe it would be, you know, sound up in the highlight pack. But for the most part, if you didn't watch it live, you wouldn't hear it. It would be in the archives, and maybe it would come out, you know, years later. Now, if you have a great call, that player is posting it on Instagram that night. Are you cognizant of the fact that you're the storyteller for these players' promotion and lives?
Well, you want to get the calls right, because you know they are going to get played over and over. It's funny, sometimes those players aren't sure who you are until they hear your voice, and then they kind of do the double take, and suddenly, you know, you're all right in their books. But you're right, there's a lot of moments from the 90s that games I called, plays I called, that don't get a lot of attention, because back then it was just different. The social media aspect of it has changed things, and now these great plays go viral, and you hope that you make the right call, because if you blow the call, you can go viral as well.
See, this year at the Grey Cup was maybe not the best game, but nobody will argue the halftime entertainment was one of the best that we've ever seen. Obviously, Keith Urban, an absolute rock star, and was gracious the whole time he was there. And I know from talking to everyone on our team at TSN, he went above and beyond, you know, to try to make it a special event, and he did that. And I think most of the fans loved having him around, and loved the halftime. And then he came up in the booth in the third quarter as well, and that was met with mixed reaction. Some people loved it. Some people, you know, on social media felt like, you know, why is he taking up this much time on the big game? What were your thoughts about the whole experience with Keith Urban, and including him being in the booth, and your thoughts?
You mean everybody didn't love him in the booth? I didn't know that. No, yeah. You know what? Here's the thing about the Grey Cup game. You have almost 10 times as many people watching the Grey Cup as a regular season game. So there's a lot of people watching that game that aren't necessarily the hardcore football players or football fans. So, you know, we try and keep the hardcore people happy, because they're our fan base, but you want to entertain, you know, a national audience that's as big as on an annual basis as any in Canadian television. So the idea was Keith Urban was willing to come up. We were all big fans. Glenn Suter's birthday was that day. He's a huge country fan. So the idea was Keith would come up, have a short visit. And the way we usually operate whenever we have guests, you know, it blows my mind because we have a Hall of Fame game every year. And people complain that we have the Hall of Famers up for a period of time. And that's when I really kind of dig in and say, you know, it's the Hall of Fame game. We're here to honor these guys. It really doesn't take a whole lot out of the game to honor our very best for 5 minutes in a broadcast. So we have Keith Urban, who's not a Hall of Fame CFL guy, but our idea was come up, have a short interview. And what we usually do is one series, and then on the first commercial afterwards, we thank the guest and he goes. Well, in that case, I forget what happened, but there was no change of possession for, I think, a penalty negated a change of possession, and Hamilton stayed on the field for
it was a fake punt, CeCe. It was a fake punt from Liram Hirilahu. He faked it to Luke Tasker. And right. And so they didn't punt it, yeah.
So we were sort of already thanking Keith, but then they stayed on the field, which it extended it, and it was probably longer than it should have been. But you know what? In that game, it's funny. I'm going to infuriate people here, but I noticed more criticism from the fans of the team that was losing that game than the fans that were winning, and that's just natural. I mean, in the 2012 Grey Cup, it's different, but we had, in a lopsided game in 2012, I think we had Doug Flutie for almost the entire third quarter, and nobody said anything. But, I mean, that's football, so, I'll acknowledge that. My biggest complaint with Keith Urban being with us last year in the Grey Cup game is I've done two games with Shania Twain as the halftime act, and neither time did she visit us up in the booth. And I'd like to have a redo on that.
you can't please everybody, but I wondered your thoughts on that, because it was actually really polarizing. Like I say, some people loved it, some didn't, but I don't have particular teams I cheer for, but I could understand as a bettor, if I was betting and my team was losing and I had to listen to guys cracking jokes and having fun while I was losing my rent money, I would probably be pretty upset too. So you might have had some gamblers on there that were also upset.
Just a final thought on that. I honestly had more people when I got back home in my hometown say, "Hey, I saw you with Keith Urban," more than I had people say, "Hey, great call in the Grey Cup game." So, you know, that's another unofficial way of surveying it, but we did hear the criticism, and I'll bet you our third quarter Grey Cup halftime entertainment interview is not as long or doesn't exist in the future.
There's been so many great Grey Cup games of late and great calls. 2016 and 2017 stand out for me for games where there were a bunch of big plays late and crazy plays, and you had great calls. But I want to actually talk about 2009, penalty markers down, flags on the field, the 13th man game. Not often are you calling a potential penalty with the same level of veracity that you would a touchdown. What was that sequence like for you in the booth?
It was amazing, and almost immediately I thought, you know, when you talk about Grey Cup lore, you think about the Fog Bowl and famous plays from the past, and almost immediately it clicked into me that this is going down in history as one of the most remarkable finishes. I mean, it's one that you never would have, Hollywood would never have come up with that script, but it happened, and it took a long time to digest it. It's also the highest rated post game we've ever had, where the audience just stayed. I think everybody was in shock. And I think we were at a point trying to make sense of what had just happened and put it in perspective. And I mean, some of the shots and the interviews, Ken Miller devastated. I think even Mark Trestman processed it a little bit different than most winning coaches would have. I think it stunned everybody, and it took a while to work our way through what we had just seen, how it happened, and how it impacted both teams. And I was really proud of our broadcast crew that night because of, and everybody from top down who made the decision to stay on the air longer. And Mark Trestman was not a guy that loved to open up to television or the media. And he allowed us in the room that night for his speech to the winning team and to the Alouettes and how gracious he was. And I remember seeing him when we got back to the hotel, and he kind of asked, how did that work for television? And I remember telling him it television doesn't get better than that. The way he handled it, the way we handled it, and everything that went into that. And I know it still is painful for fans in Saskatchewan, but it was a remarkable night of TV, and it'll always be one of the most memorable games that I'll ever be a part of.
Yeah, that telecast, there's a balance there between you as a storyteller and bringing your personality, but also letting the moment breathe a little bit and allowing the pictures and the sounds to tell a story themselves. I learned that balance from Tim McAuliffe, being in the booth with him for university games, and you're someone who has it. Can you explain for the layman how sometimes it's best just to get out of the way when there are huge moments like that?
Yeah, it's something you learn, and I do it better than I used to. You know, I used to think you had to jump out of the booth at those magic moments, but nobody does it better than Vin Scully. He'd you know, those great moments, the Gibson home run, and you might not hear from him for a minute and a half, and there's nothing more special than the fans and the reaction of the players telling the story. We can't one up that, and that was part of what I think made that night so remarkable too. You remember Paul Appelese up in the spotters booth, and his reaction was so indelible that I think for years many people thought he was responsible for the extra guy on the field. Just that reaction of dismay in the booth upstairs. And but I, you know, I have learned, and even noting watching the record-setting performances of Stiegel and G. Roy Simon last week, I kind of made a mental note that we did lay out for, I think in Milt's case, 90 seconds or so, and not sure as much with G. Roy, but I kind of made a conscious note of whether we did that right, because I think it is often way better that you say nothing or less is more in most of those great cases.
Do you have any calls in your career that you would like back, you would love a mulligan on, that you wish you said something different or maybe announced in a different way?
There's probably a lot. Those are the ones you usually try and forget. So I mentioned earlier Mike Pringle broke George Reed's record with, and he only needed a yard the next game.
Here's Pringle, right side, 2,000 yards, touchdown!
And I gave it I felt like he deserved to get a real, you know, strong call because it was a record. And I think for a long time, anybody that followed the CFL over the years didn't think George Reed's record would be broken. So I kind of gave it what I thought was a big time call, but it was a 2-yard plunge and we'd all waited an extra week for it. And it didn't, I don't think it resonated as much as it probably could have or should have. And maybe it was forced. So that's one that I'm sure there's lots of them, but That's one that I kind of cringe when I hear it now, because it doesn't stack up with the Stiegel, the Simon, the Calvillo calls and ones like that. I think there was one too with Ben Cahoon when he got to a record, and I think I realized it was 13,007 yards, and I think I realized after the fact that if I'd said 13,007, it would have sounded really good. But in that case, I didn't get it out when, you know, at the right time. So once it's gone, it's gone.
How do you navigate hard hits? Obviously, we're thinking of, you know, player safety first and foremost nowadays. Davis and I grew up in the era where we were watching Rock 'em Sock 'em and Jacked Up as a segment, you know, on ESPN. And now, you know, when we see a hard hit, our thoughts are different. Have you changed the way you call a play like that?
I think we do. But somebody would argue after that Bola Combo hit last year that, I mean, there are times when a hit just brings you out of your seat. And I remember the La Combo hit, and we both, Glenn and I, both kind of gave it the full whoa, you know, as it happened.
Second and a yard. It is Wayne Moore, and it's a big first down. Hits of the year.
Oh, man.
But there are hits now that you kind of hold your breath a little bit, and you try and play down, because I think we're more cognizant of the severity of the injuries that can come from it. And I think you have to be more cognizant of it now than maybe we were 10, 20 years ago. And maybe we should have been more cognizant of it then, but it's just I think we're a little more in tune now than we used to be.
That is, you know, a consideration both in football and hockey, the other sport that you call at an extremely high level. What are the differences for you between the two? There's certainly a different cadence between the games, but how do you prepare differently, and is your call different?
Well, the cadence is dramatically different, and I guess that's the essence of it. My preparation is pretty well the same. I think football is a little more statistically oriented, that I can crunch a few more numbers. I can get a few more numbers in. I find that there is a transition period between the two, and for a month or two, I do both. And I think because one is a stop and start and the other is flow, that it takes me a little while to get back into hockey flow mode. But for the most part, it's a similar approach. The amount of game prep going in is about the same, and I try and bring the same enthusiasm to both.
No, whenever both sports come back, they might look a bit different. The calls might need to be a bit different. You may not have fans in the stands. You might be calling off a monitor. You might be calling wearing a mask. Have you thought about how your job might be different because the realities of sport might be different whenever they return?
I'm sure there are fans out there that wish I'd had a mask on earlier just to making calls, but I don't know if I'll be calling it with a mask. I imagine it'll be in an empty booth, or maybe even from 10, 15 rows up. Maybe we'll get a little closer to the field or the rink. The one thing I noticed watching German soccer on the weekend or the UFC so far, it's different without fans. And you know, you guys asked me earlier, I try and work off my analysts, but I'm more in tune now than I used to be about letting the emotions of the fan ride it a bit. And it's going to be harder. And sometimes in an empty rink or a stadium where there's no ambience, you've got to keep reminding yourself to keep your energy up and, you know, don't get sleepy. And I think it's going to be harder. It's when there's no crowd, I get a sense that it's not exciting, and maybe the viewer at home isn't excited, and I got to work a little harder, or maybe I'm not doing a good enough job. And so a lot plays on your mind when that roller coaster of emotions from the fans aren't there. And I'm a little worried about that. I think it's going to be a little bit harder to make it entertaining, and it's just not going to be the same without fans in the stands.
Yeah, you might be very busy whenever sports comes back because we could have, CFL football and NHL hockey coming back at the same time. So your frequent flyer miles might be up, but that's, part of the blessing of where you are in your career. I worry about people who are graduating now who are trying to start their careers in this landscape. If you had a piece of advice, and I'm sure you are hit up for advice from aspiring broadcasters all the time, what would you give young sports journalists advice if you had the chance to speak to them now?
Man, we're in uncharted territory, so it's difficult. I mean, I guess my message usually is to be out there, to do as much as you can, do it as well as you can. And this business is about getting noticed and getting more and more opportunities. And my career has just been one piece of good fortune after another to get from one level to the next. And I hope that the people that are starting out are able to, keep the faith and just keep grinding. And it's easier, I hesitate in saying it because it's easier said than done, because jobs are disappearing. But I have a son who's been in the business now for a short period of time. He's getting established, and just got to keep grinding and just doing as much as you can, and trying to try to expand your level of skills and what you can bring to the table. And I guess right now that's all we can hope for, and hope that as many of these media outlets stay alive, and hopefully as everybody gets back to work, they start to expand again.
Well, it's been a highlight for us to talk to you here today and to go back and reminisce about some of the highlights that you brought into life. And it's been a bit of needed nostalgia. And we have the utmost respect for you, the body of work that you've had in this industry, and the work that you've done to bring others like myself and Davis into the industry. So thank you so much for your time and perspective.
Donovan Davis, it's been a pleasure. And again, check out that pick six for his ninth interception. That's a career highlight that I'm hanging on to.
We're gonna need you to call it again for us live because we haven't heard a live football call in a while.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, maybe next time. I don't know. I don't know if I could do that justice.
On behalf of all of us, your contribution is to the league that we all love. Much appreciated. With humility and graciousness, and of course, your quiet sense of humor, CC. Much love from all of us. Thank you.
My pleasure. I love the league, love the people in the league, and it's a privilege to be around it.
Davis, I got to talk to him literally for hours and hours and hours about different games, different players, different eras, different situations that he's been in as a broadcaster, both here in Canada and abroad. So thank you so much to Chris, and thank you, the listener, for hanging out and spending so much time with us. What was your biggest takeaway, Davis?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? If anyone you talk to about Chris Cuthbert, he's anytime I've run into him and people around, he's gracious and he's humble and all the things that I mentioned. But it's he's great for the league. He's thoughtful and puts the effort in, and it's appreciated because he makes our product better, and he's a true pro. So a guy that does it and handles it the way he does and is as good as he is. So we're fortunate to have him.
Yeah, just a great storyteller. The whole time I felt like we were all sitting around a campfire and he was telling us CFL stories. We got to reminisce with him. And thank you, number one, if you've made it this far in the podcast. We appreciate the support. Continue to support by liking, favoriting, sharing, subscribing, hitting us up on Twitter. But also, you can interact with us here at the CFL in a different way. If you want to continue to reminisce, what we're doing is we're giving you the CFL in 40, going back to 2019, the best games, whether it's regular season or postseason, streaming them on Thursdays, not only on our website, cfl.ca, but also on our platforms on YouTube and Facebook. So make sure to log on Thursday to continue to reminisce about the sport in this period without the greatest game in the world, football. Thank you so much for listening.
The WAG, presented by SportClips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.